Welcome back to the Behind the Wings podcast, produced by Wings Over the Rockies Air and Space Museum in beautiful Denver, Colorado. We've got a lot to explore. Today, we're excited to talk with retired cabin safety specialist, Denise Karen, DK Dedrick. DK has been in the cabin safety field for over 40 years and was the first Black woman to hold the position of cabin safety inspector. In this episode, we'll learn more about what exactly cabin safety is, how it has evolved with advancements in technology, and how new regulations and rules are shaping the industry today. It's time to go behind the wings. I'm your host, Rick Crandall. I've been fascinated by space for as long as I can remember.
3, 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff.
And with me is my co-host, retired fighter pilot and Wings Over the Rockies CEO, John Barry.
Roger that. Good kill.
Stay with us, because this one, you know, is going to be cool. Well, it is a delight for us to have our next guest here. Most everybody that's listening to me right now has been in an airplane cabin at some point in their life. And don't lie to me, you know, you look around and think, okay, just what all's gone into making this thing safe, and what's good, and what is this place I'm sitting in? Well, I believe we have found the expert in all of that. And I want to get started right now. And DK Dedrick, welcome to the show. And to get us started here today, how about just an introduction of yourself? Because I'm telling you, this is the most unique topic that we've talked about during the course of our podcast. And certainly the first time we've had a discussion about cabin safety, right?
Thank you. I'm honored to be the first. I've been the first in other areas that we may or may not discuss later, but I was looking for a job. Some girlfriends of mine had joined the airline, and I said, I think I'll try it out. So I applied to the little company in Minneapolis, Minnesota called North Central, and I flew for 3 years, 22 days, and then I decided, you know what, I'd like to use my degree and maybe go into the training department and train flight attendants. So I got the position and became a check flight attendant and did initial training and recurrent training for flight attendants. And then I kind of saw the handwriting on the wall. We were getting stock instead of pay and taking pay deferrals. And I learned about a little company in Albuquerque, New Mexico, that was starting a 121 operation, meaning they were becoming a passenger carrying operation for the Department of Energy. And they were transporting scientists and technicians to the weapons development sites. And I thought, what a unique kind of operation. Let me find out what this is about. So I applied for a position, and as chief flight attendant, got the position, and I loved it. This position gave me an opportunity to write a flight attendant manual, to get a exit row seating program approved by the FAA, and also a carry-on baggage program approved in coordination with a weight and balance program. And I am the point of contact, the technical expert for a code of federal regulation that allows passengers to bring their own personal portable oxygen concentrators on board for passengers with, for example, COPD or that need supplemental oxygen, especially at high altitude. That experience gave me the confidence to apply for a newly announced position by the FAA of a cabin safety specialist. So I applied, I got the okay to accept a position in Denver as a part of the team of inspectors that approve and review and assess conditions for the United Certificate Management Office that oversees United Airlines. I was delighted. I was honored. It was the first position that I raised my right hand and took an oath as a federal employee, and I took it very seriously and still do.
And with that, hiring also raised the bar for African-American women a little bit too, right?
Thank you for saying that. Yes, I was honored. I didn't know it at the time, but yes, later I learned that I was the 16th hired, but I was the first African-American, so I was honored.
That's awesome.
So DK, let's jump into our topic at hand, the evolution of cabin safety. You know, as passengers, we only see the safety demonstrations before each flight. However, there's so much more training and complexity behind the scenes than meets the eye. Can you tell us what exactly cabin safety is and what else goes on behind the scenes and certainly why it's so important?
Cabin safety supports the operation of the aircraft. Airlines, of course, are very complex. They have all kinds of different departments, and cabin safety focuses on, number one, safety. And we define safety, of course, as the personnel that are trained and qualified to continuously monitor the cabin for hazard identification and risk management. That's basically the focus. What the modern air system is concentrating on is safety risk management. And some of the cabin safety hazards that are paramount are things like turbulence injuries. And how do we mitigate turbulence injuries? By seatbelt compliance, by briefing passengers and crew members, cabin crew members, during the pre-flight briefing about hazards or weather conditions in the route of travel during the flight plan. Another emerging hazard is lithium battery fires from portable electronic devices and also smoke, fumes, odors. We lump those in the same category that contributes to a hazard of cabin air quality for occupants of the cabin. Of course, most passengers don't pay attention to that. They think that they demonstrate sophistication by not looking at the card, not observing the flight attendants, that it's the same on every airplane. We don't have to watch the briefing. And yet when incidents or accidents happen and they interview passengers, they say that they watch the briefing, but in most cases, they don't look at the supplemental card or really understand the pictorials that are on the cards. That's something that we're still evaluating and trying to improve. We, meaning the industry, are looking at ways to improve communication and mitigate the hazards and educate passengers. I'm a huge advocate for looking at unique ways, and some carriers have done this through humor, to get passengers' attention, but also measure comprehension. And of course, the issue of disruptive passengers has escalated. That's another area where it just can't be tolerated. In the environment of that metal tube, you can't have passengers acting out the way that they have been. We've got to have a more civil environment for safety reasons. As far as the FAA is concerned, cabin attendants are on board to protect the safety of passengers. Yes, also they provide wonderful service, sometimes funny banter, make flights enjoyable, but their primary reason for being on board is to be there if they need to. Passengers need to expeditiously get off an aircraft or become ill, and we have to divert a flight to another location to get them medical assistance.
You could have a whole volume that just says human behavior, because people are just going to be people. And you're right. I mean, we've all been on flights or had an experience, even in the waiting areas before boarding the flights, where people are just at some kind of a high level of agitation, and you don't know what's going to set somebody off, and you can't. You do your best to keep them calm. But tell me, despite all of that, or because of all of that, cabin safety certainly has evolved over the last few decades, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I think air carriers have to be reminded sometimes of that, and especially the front-facing employees, the cabin safety folks, that passengers go through a lot just to get to that aircraft, to cross that threshold. And I know that they go through a lot of training, as we've talked about. They have 40 hours of basic training and then 16 hours for each aircraft. And of course, several major carriers have very complex fleets and different configurations, and they have to be proficient in all of those different configurations and systems. But de-escalation training has become more and more of an issue for air carriers. I'd like to see more introductions, maybe in the briefing area, where crew members are accessible for questions or conversation before they get on board. And, you know, there's the tension of, okay, which seat am I going to get and which direction do I go and who am I going to sit next to? And just to maybe set the tone that we've got you, you know, we love traveling. We're your airline professionals. And I've noticed that with pilots more and more. They're coming out of the flight deck and saying goodbye to passengers. You know, during the beginning of the flight, of course, they're very busy with paperwork, but they are coming out at the end and saying goodbye to passengers and thanking them for flying, in addition, of course, to the crew, cabin crew. So I like that collaboration, cohesiveness to let them know that even though there's a hardened flight deck door for security reasons, there are people up there and, you know, men and women dedicated to getting them from point A to point B safely. 45,000 flights on average every day, 2.9 million airline passengers. I had to look it up, of course, across 29 million square miles of airspace. We have such a wonderful complex system. But do we talk about all of the flights that took off and landed safely every day? No. We talk about the TikTok video about the extreme cases.
We've had some headlines, and recently they haven't been about people as much as they've been about equipment a bit, with some of the issues with Boeing aircraft that have directly impacted cabin safety when traveling commercially. Even though fatal accidents are incredibly rare, those headlines still probably affect passengers' perceptions of airlines and cabin safety, right? And what's the message to people?
I can reflect back to when I was flying. And I remember I worked for a DC-9 operator, McDonnell Douglas. And then when we merged with one company, they had Boeing 727s. And in our minds, that was like the Cadillac of the manufacturers. You know, we used to comment that, oh, wow, during our door drills, when you close that door, it's like a Cadillac. It's solid and sound. And we used to say, if it's not Boeing, we're not going. You know, that was the preferred aircraft manufacturers. So yes, it hurts my heart to hear, but I have faith in the American production system. I believe that this was a one-off. And I know that the FBI is investigating. NTSB is looking into it. FAA, of course, is looking into it. They'll get to root cause analysis, and they will come back even stronger. And any other manufacturer will have lessons to learn how to improve the safety culture and to improve safety risk assessments, and they'll be better and bigger and stronger.
I often say if you ask people to be aware of all the car accidents around the road, you never get on the highway again. But, you know, it's a rare occurrence that we have, and it's a really incredible safety record we have with airlines today. But in a perfect world, DK, what changes to cabin safety would you like to see?
Once again, I want to use more and more technology. I'd like to see heads-up displays that flight attendants can train in a realistic environment. I've always been envious of simulator training for pilots and thought, why don't we have something like that for the cabin? You know, where they deal with a turbulence injury or fire smoke without having the flames or fire licking at their feet. I'd like to see more realistic training. I think NTSB would support that. I know one carrier that's experimenting with it. And so I'm hoping they can collect enough data because it has to be data driven and they have to get return on their investment. I'd like to see better education for passengers in the form of safety briefings and also evaluating safety briefings and giving feedback to the company, just like we do when we go to the post office or to a retail store. They're always, you know, circling the survey code to send back to them to say, how are we doing? I want to do the same thing with safety briefings. How are they doing? You know, did you understand the pictorials? Because they're saying in the research, 70% of the people don't understand what the pictorials are trying to tell them. That's what I'd like to see.
I'll be on a United flight Sunday, so.
You'll probably be the only one in your seat that
yes,
holds
ma'am.
Out the card.
Yes, ma'am.
My family doesn't like to travel with me because I'm so overly dramatic. Number one, I make them go to the airport 2 hours prior. And then also, they're like, why does she have to get out the card and then comment about it? And of course, critique the flight attendants. Can't you just be a passenger? Well, no. After 45 years, no. I can't just put on my blinders and earphones and zone out.
A little bit earlier, you mentioned how excited you were to see the 727 when that happened. Now, I'm going to take this a little bit further out. Commercial space travel, right, is nearing the horizon, and we're essentially going to have to start over with a whole new rule book, DK. That's right. What do you think about that?
I am excited. I'm envious, too. I mean, people that are listening to this will probably be a part of commercial air travel, you know, on tourist flights to see the other side of the moon and all kinds of wonderful things. I wish I could be a part of it. I'm hoping they have the equivalent of cabin attendants in space. I wish that I could be a part of it.
Well, before we wrap up, let's focus on a little bit, you referred to it earlier, but your personal journey one more time. When you started your job as a cabin safety inspector, not only were you in a male-dominated field, but you were also the first Black woman to hold the position as well. So can you tell us what was that like at that time, and what hardships did you face, and how did you overcome those?
I always approach people the way I want to be treated. And I know that there were times when I was looked at like, wait a minute, especially when I did a cockpit en route inspection, when I did an inspection on the flight deck, because with my FAA credentials, if there wasn't a seat in the cabin, an open seat, I couldn't occupy a seat that had a revenue passenger in it, that had a flight attendant deadheading. If the seat was completely open, then I could sit in the cabin and do my observations. If not, I was authorized to sit on the flight deck in the observer seat. And there were some senior captains that kind of bristled at that. They were like, wait a minute, what aircraft are you qualified on? You know, what's your rating? And they would say things like, well, I have to check with the chief pilot because, or, you know, maybe you should be on the flight attendant jump seat. And I said, no. If you look at your policies and procedures in your manual, and of course I had verse and chapter, because I was used to it, the aviation safety inspector is authorized to sit in the FAA observer seat. And so, yeah, there was one flight that was a little bit delayed because this captain had to check because he was like, are you air traffic control? You know, you couldn't be an inspector. I said, yes, this is my 110A. This is my little slip that gives me authorization to sit on the flight deck. And I have my headset. And yep, I'll be good. Those were few and far between. And maybe they said terrible things about me when I left, but I did. I tried to keep things lighthearted. I tried to let people know the purpose of my visit with them on the flight deck. But I can remember one time in training that one inspector approached me and said, is it lonely to be the only one? And I didn't think of it as being lonely because I always felt like I was good at networking, and I'd always solicit the help of maintenance and engineering inspectors or other ops inspectors or dispatch inspectors. And kind of, if I had to do a presentation for United, for example, I'd make sure I had a preponderance of evidence, that it wasn't just one observation or one off, because what I was saying may impact the entire way of doing business or the operations system. And sometimes they looked at that as costing them revenue. An example of that was carry-on baggage. There was a time when a major carrier decided that they were going to limit carry-on baggage as is prescribed in their op spec, in their approved carry-on baggage program, but they were going to make exceptions for premier executives or certain high flyers. And I observed that a few times in the field and then reported it, and it continued and continued. And finally, I had to write a letter of investigation, and it escalated to a civil penalty. And I remember hearing during the discussion with the lawyer, them saying, well, it's kind of the cost of doing business that we're going to have to pay this fine, and she can't be on every flight.
Oh, well, just watch.
Right? Yeah. But that incident helped during a collaboration meeting and a standardization meeting that we had with all of the inspectors to say, you know, check your company's program so that it's not just, you know, is this a trend or is this a one-off? You know, because we assumed, and we were right, that when they changed the business model and started charging for checked baggage, that that would impact the carry-on baggage program. And they, at first, like I said, they kind of minimized it. And like I said, I believe it was just because I represented cabin safety there at the long mahogany table at World Headquarters. And there I am sitting next to the POI, the Principal Operations Inspector. And they're like, you know, minimizing it. Oh, little lady, in our 70 plus years of aviation safety, do you think that really has a significant impact on the safety of the operation? And I looked at my principal and he said, hey, if this little lady isn't happy, then I'm not happy. And I have signature authority.
Yay. There you go. Now that we've heard your story, and now that there likely are people listening to this podcast who are thinking, man, I never considered that as a career, or I could recommend that to, you know, one of my kids as possibly something they want to pursue. They're not going to be a pilot, but they love aviation. Let's get them on a course. How do we get them there?
I love this question. Okay, so the first thing you want to do for the cabin safety specialty is to get a position with an airline as a flight attendant. So I used to tell people you want 4 and 4. You want 4 years as a line flight attendant, and then you want to be promoted or apply for a position in the training department is number one, or in supervision, or in manual writing, policies and procedure writing. Those will get you involved and help you understand the federal aviation regulations and how things are, programs are approved. Like the training program is an approved program for flight attendants so that they can receive a certificate of demonstrated proficiency. 4 and 4, you want 4 years as a flight attendant minimum, and then 4 years in a supervisory position or training position to apply to the FAA. And yes, it's very competitive, but it's worth it.
Great advice. Great advice. Thank you, DK.
Thank you. This has been great. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your insights about this very important position that you have.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's a passion, and I'm happy to share it.
Thank you, Denise Guerin, DK Dedrick, for joining us. Man, that's a pretty fascinating topic. There were so many aspects from DK that I hadn't considered. You know, I really was most particularly interested by just the career path. I mean, I wouldn't have thought, okay, it starts as a flight attendant and then advances to where she ended her career. What were your takeaways, John?
Well, it really brings home the reality that how important that job is. You know, a flight attendant, and later on in her career, being able to inspect and keep everybody at the right standard. And the challenges that are evident today in air travel. I mean, disruptive passengers, you know, the issues insofar as problems with aircraft that we know about here in the papers recently. But overall, the safety record of the airlines is just phenomenal. And it has gone down so much. So we'll keep the big picture in mind, but there's always things to improve. DK gave us some really good insights to that, and I really did appreciate that.
Absolutely. Well, that will do it, folks. We hope you enjoyed episode 36 of the Behind the Wings podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit wingsmuseum.org/podcast to join the conversation and access the show notes. Also, make sure to head over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen and subscribe. And while you're at it, be sure to leave a review. It's the best way to get our show out there, and we greatly appreciate hearing from you. Okay, that's your homework. We'll see you next time, right here on Behind the Wings.